This is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today.
And this is Colin Dixon, Founder and Chief Analyst at Endscreen Media. And this is
Tea Time.
So we've just got back from the TV of Tomorrow show in New York. And it was a great time, Tracy. A bit chilly in New York, but it certainly wasn't chilly in the SBA Theater, was it?
Absolutely not. But I mean, New York, I think it's getting warmer and warmer at this time of year. In the past, there's been snow and there's been ice, but it was very temperate. Maybe slightly chilly for us people in, you know, for Californians like us, but
yeah, it was.
It was pretty good weather. But anyway, it was a great experience inside the building. We had two theaters running concurrently and beautiful LG TVs in the hallway. And we're going to have Matt Durgan joining us soon.
Matt Durgan, who's Director of Content Partnerships in North America for LG TVs. So that'll be really exciting. But let's chat. What were some of your highlights? I had some great highlights. You know, the first panel, Pooja Vohra from True TV was on that panel.
She's amazing.
She had some great things to say, Tracy. So one of the things that really caught my ear was that she said that cable on demand viewing is falling, and that she's seeing TVE viewing through the True TV app growing strongly. So it looks like she's saying that people are moving from the pay TV interface to the True TV interface. I thought that was really fascinating.
That is interesting, because that means it's more of a brand centric experience that people align themselves like that. What else did she say?
Well, she had lots of other things to say, but boy, there was a ton of stuff happening there, Tracy. I want to talk about a couple of the panels that and discussions that I was involved with. So I had Adeline Cassin, who is Chief of Marketing for CuriosityStream, and we did a sit down, and we talked about one of the things that CuriosityStream has done is they've really changed their model. They've cut the subscription price in half, and they've embraced a sponsorship model. So we talked about that process, and it was really fascinating to hear how they came to figure out that this was the right approach. And I really do think it is a great approach, because that pay barrier, getting people to pay, is really tough. So it's lowering that pay barrier.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Lowering that pay barrier is really important. But more important than that is having free content. And that's what the sponsorship model, she says, has allowed CuriosityStream to do. They can now actually make really quality content available without subscribing at all. So that, in my mind, is like the real key. I don't see enough freemium services out there, services that offer stuff free, ad supported, and a paywall where you get an enhanced experience. And it looks like that's where they're moving to. So that was really cool for me. What about you? What are some of the other things you saw?
Well, just to go back to that topic for a second, I mean, right now they're doing $11.99 a year for this service, which was down from $19.99, but I swear that it was a much higher when they first launched.
It was, and that is crazy. If you're at all interested in factual-based programming, you really need to subscribe to CuriosityStream, because there's just some great stuff. It's not just science. There's lots of history, and general interest, documentary type stuff. It's really a classic, really a great service. So at that price, it's a steal.
It's interesting that they have done that, because there's a lot of interest in science programming. I know I watch a lot of it, and I watch it here. I also watch it on YouTube, and there's the science channel from Discovery, and they're everywhere. And I think it's going to be a very competitive landscape if they can get enough subscribers to dominate. So the fact that they're attracting sponsorship means that they must be doing well in terms of driving your viewership. Did she say, because I wasn't there, because I'm running the event, I can't stay to listen to every single session. I listen to everybody's session after the fact, and I'm still catching up with all my post-event work right now. But so I will, Adeline, listen to your session. If you're listening to this podcast, But tell me, what did she say about her viewership?
So she was obviously, she didn't want to talk very much about how many viewers that they've got. What she did say is that since they've made the change, they've seen a big increase in attention. People are coming, people are subscribing, and people are watching the free content, which is really good to hear. So yeah, she couldn't tell us exact numbers, so that's just the way that is with these services. They're never going to really tell you how many, but it clearly is making a big impact and doing good things for them.
Well, I'm glad also that they are, their big investor is Discovery, right? So that they're supported by a huge corporate partner is good, because you and I have discussed the plight of these small independent, you know, services, although Filmstruck wasn't independent of Turner, and Fandor, right, which just announced whatever it was right after the event, right after TVOT, that they're going out as well. So I really hope these emerging science channels find an audience, find a revenue model that works for them, because I mean, this stuff should be offered to schools. It could be life-changing for any number of people, this content. Anyway, all right, I get off my soapbox about science programming because I'm passionate about it, space and whatnot. Anyway, so what else did you enjoy about the show?
Well, there were a couple of other things. One, my infrastructure panel was just really interesting, but I actually want to highlight something moderated by another in-screen media analyst, Lloyd Dixon, and he moderated the social TV panel.
He got a lot of compliments.
It was
he was the last panel of the day.
I know.
Wasn't it crazy? Lloyd. He did such a great job. People were staying beyond the time.
You brought in cocktails for them, which I really appreciated. And I think actually enhanced the discussion. So maybe we should do that more.
Throughout the whole event.
Yeah, indeed. And one of the interesting discussions on that panel, Tracy, was they were talking about what the definition of premium is. And I think we walk around in our heads with what we assume is a doable definition of any number of terms, and premium is one of them. And I think we probably all think that, well, when we think about premium, we're thinking about, well, TV content, right? Content by mainstream providers like Netflix and meant for a high attention viewing. But you know what? That is too woolly a definition. And the discussion on that panel really led me to really think very hard about what premium is, because come on, I think premium is what people want to watch and what people will devote their attention to. And there is a ton of stuff in the social sphere that now is, I think, taking on that premium mantra. I don't even think it, you know, one of the ways that we used to categorize was how sophisticated the production techniques were. But, you know, I think you can't even use that definition anymore, Tracy, because so much good stuff is being made on shoestring budgets and being recorded very basically on smartphones and very simple cameras with very simple production technology, but it's still garnering large audiences in social media and devoted followers. So that was the interesting thing for me from that panel, that they just couldn't come up with a definition of what premium is.
It's definitely a moving target. And by the way, the title of that session was The New Content Ecosystem, Social Video and Its Implications for TV. And we had head of alternative TV from FBE, or Fine Brothers Entertainment, Oz Etzioni, who's the CEO and co-founder of Clinch. Lloyd was the moderator. Allison Stern, who's the chief strategy officer at Tubular Labs. And David Tochterman, who founded Canvas. And speaking of which, I've been hearing, you know, some interesting new programming emerging out of Twitch. So it'll be interesting to see for the gaming community, you know, original storytelling and things like that being put forth by Bernie Sue, who is an old, Bernie has participated in our hackathons and has spoken at TVOT a few times. So it's going to be interesting to see how not only social entertainment emerges, but entertainment targeted at gamers in a TV/social environment, sort of breaking you know, the definition of what premium content is. Is it a game? Is it a storytelling game? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my
I don't know.
My experience
to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my experiences with that, come on, you know, Red Dead Redemption. The first one was good. The second one is apparently even better. I need to get it and play it. These are really first person narratives. They're fantastic, absorbing, great storylines. As you say, it's very, very difficult to define what we mean by premium. There were so many good sessions at the show, Tracy. There just wasn't.
Thank you.
I just wasn't able to get to everything that I would have liked to have seen.
Your session was called, of course, The Infrastructure of OTT TV, What You Need to Know. And you had, you know, powerhouse people like Daniel Tates, who's the present CEO of Panthera, right?
Sean Doherty
of CEO of Whirl, VP of Sales from Quilt, Jesper Knudsen, who's only been in the business forever, right?
Yeah. So it was a really good session, and they had a ton of things to say. And I actually wrote up a piece on my site. So if people want to come to my site, they can read my piece, Top OTT Video Infrastructure 10 Trends for 2019. And I actually asked my panelists about what the big trends were for 2019. And there you'll find what they had to say. It's great stuff, a nice forward looking for you to be thinking about what's going on in the coming year. But you know, wait a minute. I think I hear Matthew Durgan has just joined us.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tracy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. Good to hear you.
You too. And thanks for taking care of that urgent situation.
I know. I'll have to tell you later. It was amazing. Getting a trucking company in New York City is quite a task.
Well, hey, Matthew, it's Colin.
Yeah.
Hey, Colin.
So
you've got a good voice for radio.
Oh, I haven't heard that before. That's good to know.
You can come on and join us and do, you know, be our smart TV resident expert.
Excellent. Anytime.
Talking of which, how are things going with LG and Smart TV? You have a super interface. It's that based on that old HP technology, but it's unrecognizable. It runs great. It's very fast, very performant. You have fast start apps. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Colin. Thanks. The WebOS interface has, ever since we came out with WebOS back in 2014, we have been just really pleased with the response that the market has given it. In fact, it continues to get lauded by reviewers. Just even yesterday, this is great timing on this point, we got the smartest TV. It was named the smartest TV operating system by Tom's Guide. It's a great article if you want to read it. They did a very thorough comparison of all the different features of various TV operating systems, and the WebOS was number one.
So it's like smart squared TV.
How do you define smart exactly? I mean, I know we're in the interactive TV business and so on and so forth, but how do you guys define that term?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tracy. I think the way that this all evolved for LG, there's really been kind of three evolutions for LG in this space. When we first started making TVs that were connected to the internet, we just called them connected TVs. That seemed to make sense. Everyone was calling it connected TV. In fact, a lot of markets are still using that term. A lot of the advertising market still uses that term. When we started putting in more customization features by users, such as app stores and allowing, you know, the TV basically to have thousands of applications that consumers could pick and choose which ones they wanted to have, and reprioritizing their launcher bars and things like that. When we started doing those features, we just kind of moved it to the term smart TV, because at the time the market was identifying some of those features with the term smartphone, and so it was it seemed analogous to that. We went and called it smart TV, and now we've been using this term AI, and it seems to be the next wave here for LG and for other companies, and it takes all these features, you know, to another level. So there's really been three kind of three major waves for LG when it comes to this type of innovation.
So how are you employing AI in your smart TV? What are you doing with it?
AI for LG has a number of areas, a number of different work areas that we've been using to improve the experience for consumers. There's an overall strategy here, kind of a mantra that we all follow, which is the thing that AI does for consumers is that it makes their TV more valuable to the consumer the more that they use it, the longer that they own it. And so, you know, that's a really interesting comparison when you think about most of the technology that you buy. You know, it doesn't mean more to you 2 years or 3 years after you purchased it. But with an AI experience, you know, we actually can deliver more value to people after they use the device. It recommends things better to them. It understands, you know, that they have certain tendencies, and it can basically try to evolve to meet their needs. That's something that you couldn't do on an individual basis if you didn't have, you know, the commitment to the AI technology that we put into it. Another thing that we've been doing is we've been using AI to improve things like picture quality. We've done object recognition. We have our own processing that we put into the device called the A9 Intelligent Processor. We've worked with other companies, like we have Google Assistant built in. It's been compatible with Amazon Alexa from a skills perspective. And so a lot of these features are basically the core components of our AI strategy and how we're bringing more value than ever to consumers.
I've always been curious why you guys keep improving the TV platform all the time, and when so many other people will just plug in some other OTT box and, you know, take up all that investment that you've put in it. And it's so beautiful. And how much of a problem is it? Or would you say that the most people don't use those boxes? How do you deal with that sort of the deck takeover?
Yeah, it's, you know, that strategy it's a complex one, and it's something that changes definitely from company to company. I would say So there's probably two ways that you could answer that. My responsibility, one of my primary responsibilities here, is to take care of the content relationships in the device. So obviously, I understand what you're saying very well, because if you think about content partnership, you know, those content partners are going to move, you know, from a conversation with a box company to a TV company to a phone company. I mean, that's going to be essentially their every day is balancing their resources across all these different models. So I understand where that question comes from. But as a TV manufacturer that built WebOS to satisfy consumer needs, we actually addressed it in a very different way. We addressed it in a way that actually makes it easier for consumers to go between all of these different devices and services. WebOS is the first multitasking operating system that ever existed. It's still one of the best cases of multitasking, and some TV manufacturers still haven't actually brought that on. And with multitasking, what it does is it allows consumers to switch between maybe a live TV over a set-top box, you know, over to a box, let's say like an Xbox, play a game or use one of those services that are on that device, and then go to the Netflix or the Sling TV or the Showtime application that's on the WebOS TV directly. And as it moves between all of those experiences, you know, the TV isn't turning off things. It's leaving those things in a suspended state so that consumers are moving between a program. And then when they go back there, they're not having to re-navigate to that program and then launch it and hope that service remembers where they were. It's actually just restarting that experience. And so that kind of multitasking operating system brought value to the consumers, and it sidesteps your entire question, Tracy, about like, how do I then go and compete with them? Because I'm obviously in a market here where we're working with content partners and we want them to, you know, give more of their attention to LG. So both things are happening at the same time. It's good for consumers, though.
So one of the new things for this year, Matthew, is that there's actually free linear content streamed coming into smart TVs, and you're doing the partnering. So tell me about that on LG TVs, and tell me who you're working with.
Right. So we're very proud of this this implementation on the TV. We worked with a company, Xumo, who they've operated in the market, you know, with these streaming channels. And one thing that we saw as a company when the opportunity to work with Xumo came around was for us to essentially innovate the TV, not just use this as an application that's on the device that the consumer would then, you know, go and download and then be in that world. But one thing that we thought would be valuable is if we brought this Xumo experience into the over-the-air area of the TV, the guide, the traditional, what you kind of used to think about as, you know, TV. And so by bringing the Xumo content into the over-the-air guide, what you do is you marry together over-the-air content with streaming content. It's all based on advertising. It's all, you know, consumers don't have to put a credit card in there in order to enjoy all this content. And so we call it Channel Plus, and basically the reason why it's Channel Plus is it's a very low use operating system, or I'm sorry, application. You're not trying to navigate content and make a choice. You're basically just flipping channels and you're experiencing TV the way that we used to experience it. And whether, you know, whether the user is experiencing that from an over-the-air source or from an over-the-internet source, it doesn't really matter to the user because it's one interface. It's not asking them to pay for it, and it's flipping around from content to content, and they can enjoy all that great content. Xumo brings great services in from CBS and Fail Army and a number of great great programs. There's over 100, I think over 150 shows now, or channels, free channels from the Xumo service. Growing all the time. And that's in addition to the over-the-air channels. It's integrated on the same guide.
Are you guys moving quickly towards being ATSC 3.0 ready?
Yes, we are. We are putting a large amount of resource into that topic. We have many people who are contributing to the technical side of those boards, the business side of the boards. We're very focused on it. We think that, you know, it's great. It's great for the market that technology would evolve, that it would, you know, continue to provide more opportunities for consumers to not just get, you know, more channels potentially, but better quality video through those channels, even some data, so they can, you know, they can actually expand what the TV is going to be used for. So we're excited about that one. It's been a couple years of just you know, industry conversations, standards, ratifying how the spec is going to work, aligning the product resources. But we're looking forward to the day very soon to where consumers can actually be able to enjoy that one.
Well, we had a big session with the leaders of the development of that spec and integration into industry at TVOT, where you were. And I wanted to say thank you again, by the way, for bringing your OLEDs.
Yes, we love ones. Your New York show. Love it.
It was
one
beautiful.
Of our favorites.
Oh, thanks. Just shining in the hallway, and people were gaping how beautiful everything looked.
I was one of those people.
That was the OLED, the C8. We brought three of those and had them positioned around the show, and it was great. We put the content that plays on the C8 in the retail environment, and it's just fun watching what that display can do. It's just really amazing.
It was very tactile, very tactile. Oh, you know, really.
Indeed.
Let me step. I have one more question to follow on that last comment about ATSC 3.0. And then Colin, take it away. But you mentioned more data, and you know, one thing that we're seeing is that there's, you know, Netflix has announced that they're going to be doing a big screen. You know, well, not going to start doing it. They are going to be doing interactivity, right? With big programming with the Charlie Brooker, Black Mirror, and they've been doing children's programming. And so, you know, there may be an interest in single screen, big screen interactivity. Where are you on supporting that?
You're talking about interactivity with Netflix.
Netflix is somehow integrating it into their own service, which is another story, and they're not telling anybody how they're doing that. But I'm kind of curious with WebOS, you know, I know you have some relationships with other entities that allow interactive ads and things like that, but is there any movement towards making the software even more supportive of single screen interactivity in all sorts of ways?
Yeah, there's a number of ways that we've been trying to create interactivity experiences on the device. One of the methods that's already live today is in direct response. For example, you're watching an advertisement and an advertiser wants to give the user the ability to drop in, let's say, a phone number so that they could get an offer over text or some kind of follow up for information. So, you know, some of that activity is actually live on the device today.
Right.
Interactivity in terms of how it works with within each application, it's a little bit different because, you know, some of these companies, some of our partners, you know, have, you know, robust strategies on application development and creating new features for users. You know, frankly, Netflix is one of the best ones. They are constantly testing new experiences for consumers and trying to figure out how to continue to improve the experience on TV. So it's been that's been tremendous, value to the consumers. The other thing that I think, you know, it's not necessarily interactivity, but one thing that we've been enjoying recently from a user perspective has been all the different ways that consumers can get to content, right? So, like, for example, you know, Vudu putting in advertising-supported content, or, you know, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, Crackle going into, you know, original programming, over-the-air live TV with Sling TV and Hulu TV and YouTube TV all on the platform. So there's been just a really explosion of different ways to go and get content. Consumers have more choices than ever on doing that.
Right, they sure do. So I got one more question for you, Matthew, and that's really looking, we're winding up the year here, 2018, and I was just wondering what should we expect from smart TVs in 2019? What new exciting things? I know you can't tell us probably what your big announcements are at CES, but maybe you can talk a little bit about the direction that smart TVs are headed in.
Well, I know you, you guys joined the Wireless Speaker and Audio Association, right, to do wireless speakers?
That's right.
You're going to be showing that at CES?
Yes, we have a big strategy around that. We've been, you know, obviously working with a number of the tech companies out there. One of the things that I really enjoyed about the demonstration at TVOT was us being able to demonstrate Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos working together. That's an exciting demo when you listen to that. Those technologies are really stretching what consumers can experience on the device. Some of the things like WebOS next year obviously is going to be innovating again. We're continuing to improve the experience with WebOS. We have a couple announcements that's going to happen just in a few weeks now at the end of December going into CES. There's going to be huge announcements for improving WebOS. Like you said, Tracy, it was already great to begin with. And I often kind of feel the same way. Like we have an operating system which already receives, so much credit out there in the marketplace from consumers and from reviewers, but we're not satisfied. We're continuing to innovate, and so we're going to put a couple announcements in there. The user interface is getting even more interactive with consumers, more content-focused, being able to show content directly to consumers, not just show the logos of services which provide content to consumers, but actually bring the content directly into the user interface so that consumers can get excited about what their TV can do, what they can go consume. So that's all going to be announced at CES. We'll be demonstrating WebOS on the floor, and we'll be making those announcements very shortly.
And you have some paper thin rollable screens.
Oh yeah, the if you are going to CES this year, you have to go to the LG booth. The way that we have been using our panels to just push the envelope in terms of new creative ways to put video. And last year we had this canyon that you could walk through, and it was amazing. This year we're gonna even like be even more exciting than that. So it's really great.
More exciting.
It sounds really cool. It sounds to me like, Matthew, that I need to be thinking about pensioning off my aging no name brand Android TV and picking up a new LG.
Yes, Colin, it's time. We're going to have to talk later. I'll help you set that up.
Ooh. Cool. Excellent. Right. Excellent. Well, Matthew, I hope maybe we can get you back after CES and you can talk us through some of the big announcements that you've got there.
All right.
Thanks for participating at TVOT, Matt.
Thanks yes. so much.
As always.
For your incredible team. Those guys were tireless in getting it all together. Wu-Chang. All right. Take yes. care. Have a good holiday.
Thanks. You too.
All right, in New York.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Well, I mean, he really did bring these beautiful screens, and everybody just loved to float around them at the event. And I was very proud to have them there. And to be honest, LG has supported our show, you know, as a sponsor, and I really appreciate it. So it's a good collaboration.
Yep. It's great to have him on. And, you know, I really am. It really is interesting, the position that smart TVs are in, Tracy, because, as you said, I'm glad you asked Matthew that question about other devices. You know, as I look at the data, what I see is that smart TVs are gradually beginning to be used a lot more by consumers. That's not to say that they're not giving up their streaming media players. They've still got their Rokus and their Apple TVs. But, you know, in the long run, you got to believe that the smart TV is going to end up being everything that you're going to need. But I don't know. I still think we're a little ways away from that being the case yet.
You know, LG does do projects with artists as well to try and find new ways to use big screens. I mean, I know, you know, various wealthy people put them in their house to use them as sort of changing art galleries, but I do think that smart TVs do need to find more ways to become of use to people beyond just content delivery. So it'll be exciting to hear what those innovations are at CES, and you know, how they move beyond just delivering other people's content. I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, me too. But you know what? I think we're just about out of time for this week. So why don't we wrap up and look forward to talking to everybody next week.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Thank you. See you all again soon. Bye. Okay, bye.